The Tom Woods Show, episode 1456.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, as you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been spreading some pretty terrible ideas, and she's wrong on just about everything. Well, I've put together the definitive smash of all of it. The Green New Deal, affordable housing so-called, free college, high tax rates. It's in another free ebook, yes, a free ebook called AOC is Wrong, The Upside Down World of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Grab your free copy at aociswrong.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, the final episode of Scott Horton Week, and we are finishing it up with a discussion of Yemen. Now, with regard to Afghanistan, which you might think we would cover in a week like this, remember, Scott is the author of Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, a tremendous book. You can pick it up. I'll have it on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1456. He does have a website, foolserrand.us, but I've got it on the show notes. So that's – Scott has already done enormous, tremendously valuable work on that. Scott, by now, I think you know his credentials, so I'm going to kind of keep that limited. So he is the libertarian foreign policy expert, host of the Scott Horton Show, wearer of many hats, doer of many things. Website is scotthorton.org. And today we're going to talk about Yemen, because that is one of these areas where there is a decent amount of awareness among a fair amount of people. Certainly more people know about Yemen than know what happened and what the causes of what happened in Somalia were that we talked about close to the beginning of the week. So we're going to talk about the current situation in Yemen and where it all came from. So Scott, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Tom. Let me make one real quick announcement at the beginning here too.
Yeah.
If you would.
Please do.
There was once a Twitterer named Mance Rayder, which was named after a Game of Thrones character, the leader of the free folk there. And he put out a couple of quick books. I know you know him, Freedom Through Memedom, and I forgot the name of the other one. But anyway, he's great. And I've been running his podcast at the Libertarian Institute for a couple of years now, I think. A couple of years since 2017. So I decided to go ahead and make him the managing editor of the Libertarian Institute. And I meant to say about his name there. He started out as Mance Rayder, and then he decided to go ahead and tell people his name was Pete Raymond. But it turns out actually Raymond is his middle name. It's Peter R. Quinones. That's his real name. And as managing editor of the Libertarian Institute, he's going ahead and finishing off the AKAs here and going to go by his real name, Peter R. Quinones, everybody's favorite Mance Rayder, the host of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, I'm very proud to say, is now managing editor of the Libertarian Institute.
That is a great, great development. I'm a big fan of Pete, so I'm very glad to hear about that. LibertarianInstitute.org is that website. All right, let's try to do what we did yesterday, where I want you to start off with, and really, really restrain yourself here, just the basics, 2 to 3 minute overview, the basics of what is the story in Yemen, mm-hmm. How did it get started, how did the U.S. get involved, and where has it wound us up today?
Right. Okay. It started really with Obama's CIA drone war against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in 2009. Those are the guys that bombed the coal. And then after he started bombing them, they tried to do the underpants bomb and blow up the plane over Detroit on Christmas Day, 2009. Remember that? And they later did the Charlie Hebdo attack and one of the others, I think the Eagles of Death Metal concert in Paris, France. A couple of those atrocities in the mid-teens here. So that's who they are. Obama bombed them. But in order to be allowed to bomb them, just like we talked about in Pakistan, he had to help the Pakistani government wage this war against the Pakistani Taliban, which ended up leading to the Times Square attack and the rise of ISIS in Afghanistan and all these other consequences. Well, in order to wage the war against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Obama had to bribe the government in the capital of Sana'a. And that the leader was this dictator named Saleh. And essentially Obama paid him a bunch of money and guns, which he then used, of course, double dealing Yemeni politics, as bad as America or worse. He then uses Al-Qaeda guys and Muslim Brotherhood guys and arms them and sends them off to fight his enemies in the north of the country, the Houthis. And that's a political designation of a group of Shiite radicals who were radicalized by Saudi intervention in eras past. And they are a group of Zaydi Shia who are actually very close to the Sunnis and not very closely associated in their religious beliefs with the Shia of Iran, for example, who are Twelvers, who believe in the 12th Imam will come back at the end of the world. Whereas
not too many details. I want just the basic overview.
But so the Houthis grew more and more powerful. And every time Saleh attacked them, they beat his men back. And grew more and more powerful each time. And then when the Arab Spring came, the Houthis and virtually all other factions agreed that Saleh had to go. And so Hillary Clinton and the Saudis intervened. And instead of letting the people of Yemen work out their problems, they transitioned Saleh out for his vice president, Hadi, who had no real political support, not nearly as broad as Saleh ever had. And he had lost his. Well, then Hadi made the same mistake and attacked the Houthis and lost. Only he lost big. He lost the capital city. And by the end of 2014, he was on the run. Beginning of 2015, the Houthis took over the capital and were marching on Aden in the south. And he had to flee the entire country for a hotel in Riyadh where he's been under arrest or, you know, house arrest as a sock puppet ever since then. And at that point, Saudi Arabia said to Obama, we're launching a war here and you're going to help us. And Obama said, sure thing. And that was how the war against the Houthis started. Now, you might have noticed, I said, Saleh was using Al-Qaeda against these guys. In other words, these are Al-Qaeda's enemies. In other words, America's fighting for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. The same guys that this whole war started because we were fighting against them. Now we're on their side. Fighting against their deadly enemies, the Houthis. So again, this war is treason. And why? Because, and so it was a tangent, but it is important, because the Houthis are Shia, which supposedly means that they're the sock puppets of the Iranians and representatives of Iranian power in the southwestern part of the Arabian Peninsula, which is intolerable. Never mind, that's not really true. All the real experts say that the Houthis are not Hezbollah. They are not Iran's 51st state there in Yemen, the way Hezbollah is in southern Lebanon, really in any way. And all of Iran's gains here are essentially rhetorical and provided to them by the U.S. for giving them credit for all the Houthis' gains this whole time, which isn't really true. And importantly, Tom, Patrick Coburn, the greatest Western war reporter alive today, reported back in 2015 about how this started was young deputy crown prince Mohammed bin Salman, Mr. Bonesaw, now the crown prince. He was 29 years old and he'd just become the deputy crown prince and the defense minister. And he launched this war for his own public choice theory. Look at me, you know, gain power politically inside the Saudi system reasons at the expense of the people of Yemen. And
there's more.
I'm sorry, I'm off in the weeds already.
That's essentially
the overview. We fought a war against Al-Qaeda, but we had to bribe the government to do it. And then the government used those arms to pick a fight with his enemies, who ended up whooping him and his successor. And then America ended up waging a war against the victors there that has put us on the side of Al-Qaeda, literally flying as Al-Qaeda's Air Force and floating as Al-Qaeda's Navy in this war against their enemies, the Houthis.
All right. So now I want to ask.
That's what I should have said in the first place, but there you go.
All right. So here's what I want to ask. I cannot remember the exact. There's one word that Obama used that sends a chill up my spine to describe how he justified conniving at what the Saudis were doing in mm-hmm. Yemen. And it was something like it wasn't to appease them, it wasn't to pacify them. You know what I'm looking for? That thing that he said?
To placate. The Saudis.
To placate the Saudis. So,
which is worse, right? Because it's, I don't know exactly how to parse the difference between those
right,
terms.
But it's right.
It's more like unnecessarily make them feel better is what placate means, right? It's just sort of like, yeah, for your feelings, but not for any good reason.
All right. So let's talk about in what way does, obviously it's obvious how it placates them. I mean, helping them carry out their policy placates them, but explain why in particular Obama feels it necessary to placate them.
Right. So at the time, and this is a terrible and horrible irony, at the time, Obama was pursuing the last couple of months of negotiation over the Iran deal. And we've covered that in the past. And essentially, despite all the right wing, you know, echo chamber hype about the deal, it very effectively locked down Iran's nuclear program from either a plutonium or a uranium path to a bomb, expanded inspections to the nth degree, and virtually made it impossible for them to make a nuke without America having plenty of notice to start a war and stop them if it came to that. And which was already the case, but it just absolutely proved the civilian nature of Iran's nuclear program to the nth degree, which means that Iran should have said, hey, thanks. That secures our interest. We can rest assured when we sleep at night that the Iranians are not going to nuke us in our jammies because America has made sure that their program is verified to the nth degree to not be making weapons grade material in any way. But instead, that wasn't their concern. That was always a giant hoax. The Iranians never were making nukes. That was all just a bunch of lies cooked up in Tel Aviv, of course. Well, and Washington. What the real problem was from the Saudis' point of view was that this threatened their position in America's order in the Middle East, and that it looked like maybe America was going to start tilting back toward Iran. Obama had kind of made it clear he was sick and tired of the Saudis' BS in some ways, and they thought, oh no, look, this is the first step on a real rapprochement with Iran, which of course America can't just be friends. That would mean we then use Iran against our other regional enemies and this kind of thing, and so that was what the Saudis essentially were panicking about. And so essentially what they said to the Obama government was, if you really love us, you'll help us wage this war against this Shiite group in Yemen to prove it. And Obama's team said, okay. And so here's the other quote from that same paragraph in that same New York Times article, Tom, which is, this is no scoop. There's 17 official sources for this story. It's a press release by the Obama White House about why they did it. And it says right there in like paragraph four, that they knew, they all judged and agreed on Obama's team, that the war would be long, bloody, and indeterminate. Talk about placate. How about that one for a vocabulary term? Indeterminate. We're going to start a war that we're telling you up front. We can't even imagine how it might end in a way that we could say would be a success. Oh, well, bombs away. And they launched it anyway. And I'll tell you what. There's a recent piece by Robert Malley, who was one of Obama's guys, that he wrote for Defense One. And the article is decent, saying we have to stop this madness. It's horrible. We're going to get to how horrible it is in a minute. Don't let me forget. But he's saying we have to stop this war. But in that article, Malley tells the story of the decision-making process in the Obama White House. And it sounds like a bunch of idiot substitute teachers in the break room going, I don't know, you want to, And he says, some people said that they thought that they remembered Obama saying that, well, we'll help defend Saudi Arabia, but we won't go as far as helping them attack Yemen. But other people said they don't remember him saying that. And then, and just back and forth like this. And it basically makes it sound as though they all came to a consensus that, yes, let's go ahead and help the Saudis launch this war based on a bunch of mutual shrugs going around the room, mumbling, half-hearted, you know, incomplete sentences, and just nothing even resembling something like what you would think would be the decision-making process to start a war. But you can read it for yourself. It's Robert Malley in Defense One, and it's really incredible insight into, this is really their conversation is, well, I don't know, what do you think, Susan? Well, I don't know, what do you think, Dave? And then, you know, based on a bunch of nothing, based on a bunch of no good arguments, they start this war. It was called Operation Decisive Storm. And it's now been going on for 4.5 years. And hundreds of thousands of innocent people are dead, including, of course, more than, according to the United Nations already, more than 100,000 children under the age of 5 years old. You know, and the worst cholera outbreak in modern history. And a deliberate policy to target civilian infrastructure to starve out and destroy the people in order to force them in their desperation to overthrow the Houthi government that they had no choice in installing anyway, just like didn't work with Saddam Hussein by starving his people into revolt, which isn't working against Maduro, which hasn't worked against the Castros and the communists in Cuba, which has never worked anywhere. And we starved the people to death to force them to do a regime change for us, but they just continued doing it anyway.
Scott, can you describe precisely what the nature of the U.S. involvement is?
Yeah, from the beginning, there's, you know, the entire Saudi army is built on American equipment and money and training and everything anyway. It's all American F-15s dropping American bombs made by, you know, those are Boeing jets, dropping Lockheed and Raytheon made bombs on people's heads. And it's American contractors and military men and spies who do all of the care and feeding of the Saudi Air Force and all the training of their pilots. As we've talked about numerous times, I have five different journalists and or four journalists and one former ambassador, each of whom have one source that say to them that there are or have been American white boys sitting in the back of those Saudi F-15s holding the princeling's hands all the way to their targets where they're going and murdering Yemeni civilians. That was at least in the early part of the war. I don't have recent sourcing for that. I don't know what that's called when you have five single sources as here's and secondary sources too, right? I'm the receiver of the different five. They're not all talking to each other. But anyway, and then the Navy, of course, is enforcing the blockade. And we have Boeing refueling tankers that have refueled the Saudi jets as they're loitering around looking for people to kill all the time leading up until just the end of last year, where supposedly that has ceased only because America sold Saudi so many Boeing tankers that now they can do all their own refueling. And of course, all of our military force that we've helped back the United Arab Emirates as well has been deployed there. They really had the major land force involved there, and including a bunch of mercenaries. And this was the famous CNN report from a couple of months ago about Al-Qaeda fighters driving around in American MRAPs that were developed to protect Americans from Al-Qaeda in Iraq, IEDs in Iraq War II. And there's Al-Qaeda in Yemen driving around in the things, not because they stole them from the Americans or their allies, but because they were given them by America's allies, the Qataris. The Al-Qaeda guys are essentially part of the, the UAE. Their ground force on the ground there. And of course, there's great Associated Press reporting, legendary level reporting about the UAE's atrocities against the people of Yemen too, torturing them, barbecuing them over spits like Han Solo and Endor, you know, only really not the PG version, burning people to death over, you know, hot open fires like UN peacekeepers in Somalia in 1993. And so it's been a total catastrophe, and yet the lines on the ground have not moved. And the idea that somehow the Houthi government is going to fold up and go away and allow the Saudis and the Americans or anyone else to put their guys in power there is they're no closer to that goal than they ever have been. And now the big news is that, as we talked about the other day, I guess on the first episode of these, is that the UAE is pulling out. They've decided now that with rising tensions with Iran, if war between Iran and America and Saudi breaks out in the Middle East, they don't want to be targeted by Iran. They want to survive that thing. And so they're saying, hey, let's calm down our part in this right now. And this is one of their goodwill gestures toward the Iranians is vastly scaling down, at least, their involvement. But that just means that the Saudis are in the weakest position that they've ever been in there. They have less, they already had 0% chance of achieving their goals. Now they have less than 0% chance of achieving their goals there. The only thing they could do would be to convince Donald Trump to send in the Marines, which I guess is a possibility. I don't know. The other side of that is if Trump plays hardball and tells them, forget it, pal, you're sunk, you failed, you face up to it, go to some peace talks and come to an agreement with these people. And I don't think he's going to talk to the Saudis that way. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, Barack Obama started this genocide, and then 2 years into it, Donald Trump picked it up, and it's now been another 2.5 years of this on his watch. He's only escalated it. And it's true that he's targeted AQAP a little bit, but he only killed innocent civilians and accomplished nothing. So essentially, as a real Yemen expert, Michael Horton, no relation to me, told the great journalist Mark Perry back in 2015, and we are flying as Al-Qaeda's Air Force in this war.
Can you elaborate on a theme that has come up quite a bit during this week, namely that the Iraq war led to the strengthening, relatively speaking, of Iran, and then the architects of the Iraq war said, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened, even though all our opponents told us exactly that this would happen, and that so much of U.S. foreign policy since then has wound up being a matter of trying to balance off different powers against Iran or weakening some power that's friendly with Iran. How does that factor into the U.S. Involvement with Saudi Arabia over Yemen?
Well, that's the whole excuse, right? So first of all, we were placating them because we didn't want them to think that we're leaning back toward Iran. But then the excuse for the whole thing is that the Houthis aren't just the Houthis. They're the cat's paw of Iran because, get it, Shia. Now, like I was saying, no, they're actually quite a bit different than the Iranian Shia, and they're not that closely allied politically with them either. But the American narrative, the excuse for having the war, is that the Houthis are the cat's paw of Iran. So, but what that means in effect is Iran gets all the credit for everything the Houthis do, but they also get the blame too. So it empowers them in a way, but it also means that we're not just fighting the Houthis and the civilian population of the country. We're fighting against the expanding Iranian empire. It's the renewed Persian empire, the Shiite crescent. And like I say, as you just said, hey, the Iraq War II only empowered them. Trying to spite them in Iraq War II only empowered them. Trying to spite them in Syria only empowered them even more. Now we're trying to fight against their friends in Yemen under the excuse that they're their closest allies and represent another advance in Iranian power. And all that does is end up increasing Iranian power and influence, which is the reason why they can't quit now. But what else are they going to do? They just keep losing. And I want to say again, when I say the Navy's enforcing a siege there, I mean, this is a siege against trade. And they have the airport locked down. They have the ports locked down. For years, the only food getting in at all was aid. No commercial shipping at all allowed. And the aid ships, you know, oh, sorry, we have this inspection regime that means all this food is rotting for months before it's allowed off the ship. And so it's no good anyway, and this kind of thing. And it is a deliberate policy to starve the people, to target, as I told you before, Martha Mundi from the London School of Economics did this study about how they target the grain silos. They target the flocks of sheep and whatever other animals out in the fields. They target the irrigation systems, natural and artificial. They target the waterworks, the electricity, the sewage, the cholera hospitals, Tom. They bomb them. They're waging. This is a medieval siege campaign. It's a genocide. It's a deliberate attempt to inflict a famine on desperate, already hungry people to make them starve to death, or to make them, again, so insanely desperate that they'll die trying to overthrow the Houthis, who are the only ones defending them from this genocide, which is absolutely crazy.
Now, look, I may not know all the history of the world, but this whole approach of we're going to tighten a vice around you until you overthrow a regime we don't like, has that ever worked? I mean, can you think of an example of that?
No, I don't know of any that ever did. But you know what? I mean, look at Iraq War I. Bush Sr. told the Shia, rise up and overthrow Saddam. But then, oops, he realized that meant Skiri and Dawar were coming. That meant reversing Reagan's policy and importing the Iranian Revolution. So remember, he choked. Spring of 1991, Bush Sr. choked and left them high and dry like the Bay of Pigs and let them all be slaughtered by Saddam's forces. So that was their one big chance to overthrow Saddam. But then Bush Sr. kept the sanctions on. And Bill Clinton, for another 8 years, kept the sanctions on in the name of starving the Iraqi people so that they would rise up and overthrow Saddam. When we told them to do it, Bush Sr. went on Voice of America, said, rise up, overthrow them, implying we would support them, and then let them all be machine gunned and slaughtered by tanks and, you know, run down by the MEK cult in tanks and all of this stuff, 100,000 people killed. But then, oh well, you had your one chance. We betrayed you. We encouraged you and betrayed you. But now we insist that we're going to starve you until you try it again. Now that you're in no position whatsoever. It's like a double blind study. It's a scientifically proven fact that you are now. We just had a controlled experiment. We know that you cannot overthrow Saddam now. But we're still going to starve you until you do. And this is the policy that got America attacked on September 11th. And now, and that and sending troops into Saudi in order to enforce that blockade, which Trump just repeated that mistake this week. He's sending troops back to Saudi. That, remember, Paul Wolfowitz said I was right and that Ron Paul was right. Paul Wolfowitz and Ron Paul called him out at one of those famous debates at the AEI in 2012. Said, see, there's Paul Wolfowitz right there in the audience. Tell him, Paul, we had to get our bases out of Saudi Arabia because that was what was causing the Al-Qaeda war against us, right? And Wolfowitz starts sinking in his chair and biting his thumbnail like you could have written it better for a sitcom, like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm or something. But Wolfowitz said that was why we needed to invade Iraq and move our bases 100 miles north. They won't mind that, just as long as they're not in Saudi. But at least he got the first part of the argument right. But that was the whole thing. We have to have bases in Saudi so we can bomb and blockade Iraq so that the people will rise up and overthrow Saddam. That's what caused those towers to fall down, not explosives inside. American genocide. And seriously, like, what is this? It, you know what? It's just stupid, basic racism. And it's okay. You know what? I was 14 in 1991, and I didn't care how many people they killed in Iraq. Iraqis weren't human to me. I didn't give a damn. I'm just a red-blooded American boy, Tom. I just wanted to see some explosions. And their lives were just, they might as well have been cartoon characters in a comic book I never read because I wasn't into comics. They didn't matter to me. But I was a 14-year-old sociopath. I was a horrible, terrible punk kid. But that is the attitude of the American people, that this just doesn't matter. That you can just go around committing genocide against people. And there's just children of a lesser God. Screw them. Let God sort them out and all of that crap, which is just inhuman. You know, you're supposed to be some kind of panty-waist, liberal, do-gooder crybaby. If you think that it's not okay to deliberately slaughter children unending, to deliberately starve them to death, bombing their sheep in the field, bombing their cholera hospital, and we call them the barbarians. They're the barbarians. Why? Because we have lighter skin and a pretension of property rights protections or some ridiculous joke called the rule of law. Have you ever heard that one, Hardy? Har, har, har. They're the barbarians, not us. And that's why we can do this to them. It's crazy. You know what it is? It's the kind of thing you could only believe if you never in your life heard anyone say, that's ridiculous. But once you hear it, what's your excuse still? You know what I mean? It's not right. I was wrong when I was in ninth grade about the Iraqis and what George Bush was doing to them. You know, but hey, he was George Bush. He was the president. If he said it was okay, then who the hell are you to argue, man? You know, until Jesus comes back, the president of the USA is the highest arbiter of morality on earth. If he says we can start a war, we can start a war. And even if his ambassador told Saddam to go ahead and invade the northern part of Kuwait, if he felt like it, who cares? Go ahead. Burn them all. Hey, that's the American way. That's what we believe. That's our civic religion. We're exceptional.
This episode wraps up Scott Horton Week. So as we do so, I want to turn things over to you for a final word. Just anything you want to say to the folks.
Sure. Okay, well, on the subject matter, I want to say that I'm not just an American. I'm a Texan, and I'm on my own side here, and I am a bit of a Texas and American patriot, even though I am an anarchist too, but it's still my country. And, you know, I have a kinship with everybody between San Diego and Bangor, right? Just like we all do. And, you know, I started my interest in all of this is fighting for liberty here at home. War is the health of the state. The evil empire overseas is what threatens my liberty here. And, you know, so that, I guess, is underlying all of this. I'm not here to take the side of the Ayatollah, Sistani, or Khamenei. I'm not here to side with Saddam or Assad or Osama or any of these things. The point is I'm siding with the truth, which is contrary to every fake excuse that the U.S. government uses to justify this madness. It's not right. And it doesn't have to be this way at all. Even the people who led the terror war at the beginning, Gary Bernson, who could have caught Osama if Bush would have given him the Rangers he was demanding and hadn't pulled him off the case in the middle of the Battle of Tora Bora. But anyway, no question of his devotion to that cause at that time. And he said in 2016, you know, none of this ever had to happen. The whole war could have been over by 2001, by the end of 2001. That was it. It was a few hundred guys. It was no mass movement. This whole terror war, unnecessary from beginning to end. You know, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million people killed. An entire century started off on the wrong foot in every way and disgracing America's name, disgracing freedom's name. And all of our names, and spending all our money to do it too, and accomplishing our enemy's overall agenda to destroy us, to bait us into destroying ourselves. The only real way to bring America down, to get us to commit a mass murder suicide attack, just like what they do. And that's what our government has set about to do. And all we have to do to stop them is quit believing in this nonsense. It's crazy and it's wrong. So forget it. You know, you don't have to believe it anymore. Look at the poll came out last week. Veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, 60% super majorities say we never should have done it. Yep, that's right. It was all, as Thomas Jefferson would say, a useless sacrifice. Did not have to be this way at all. Maybe that should be the title of the book, A Useless Sacrifice. And anyway,
Wow, that's better. I think that's better than the title you have.
Yeah. And then maybe, you know, one of your listeners said it should be, it doesn't have to be this way.
Nah, that's too cheese ball.
Yeah, it's too much. But that'll be in there. I ended Fool's Errand with something like that. But that'll be in there somewhere. Because that really is my point. Like, to break out, imagine for a minute that it just, you didn't have these decisions. In fact, you know, like a thought experiment. Never mind Al Gore winning in 2000 or any of that, but just think if it had not been Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and the neoconservatives. But what if Bush had just nominated some Republican governors to fill some nobodies to fill those spots, and then Colin Powell had been his main counselor on foreign policy? None of this would have happened. And I'm not acquitting the man. He is a war criminal for lying us into Iraq War II. He's guilty of genocide. Well, at least mass murder and deliberately lying us into war. But it was not his policy to do. He went along like a good soldier, as they call it. But if it had just been Colin Powell's counsel that Junior had been relying upon, this whole century would not have happened like this at all. That's all you need for your counterfactual is Powell saying, well, that wouldn't be prudent to go off half-cocked on something and do a thing. It took Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Feith and Wormser to get this done. Bolton. Without that faction, without that force, George Bush wouldn't have even tried it. You know, him and Rove could not have convinced Powell that, yeah, we need to do this for election purposes or whatever. No way. Powell would have overruled it all. Would have never happened. And that's all you need to know really right there. You know, that he was opposed to it. Well, why would he be opposed to it? He was General Powell. Why wouldn't he want to start a war? It was only because he knew better. That's all, you know? Anyway, and then the other thing I want to say is just thank you to you and to all of your listeners and to everybody who's helping to support this thing. The rough draft is written. I just have, you know, essentially to really, you know, polish up the prose as best as I can and get all my sourcing in there as best as I can for you. And I'm going to really, really, really try to get this thing done for you by time to, you know, order it for your family and friends for Christmas. And to be part of the conversation next year, it's going to be the 2020 campaign. And I really want, you know, my ambition is that people will be able to say, hey, there's this book out now that says it doesn't have to be this way at all. We could just forget it. Every one of these things has been a fool's errand and a counterproductive catastrophe and all of these things. And we can just knock it off right now and this kind of deal. And I want to help people to be able to form those arguments and do whatever they can with, you know, their own power and influence and voice in participation in electoral politics or the circus surrounding it, or to whatever degree, and get this argument in there. We don't have to believe in this anymore. We never really did have to. And it's just, it's done now. The argument's won now. It's just waiting to be completely put into effect.
Well, folks, I want to make one last appeal to you. Scott is working on a very important, thorough book going over the war on terror and telling the real truth about it. And I want folks to help pitch in and make it a reality. And as I say, I've said all week, I'm not asking you to do something I don't do. I support Scott every month. And what we're asking right now is, if you can help him out this one time, it's going to be for a project you're going to be very, very proud to have been associated with. So the link is tomwoods.com/Horton. And we're running out of time to take advantage of a very generous offer to match all the funds raised this week for Scott. So whatever you give will be doubled by somebody else. So now really is the time. So do help out Scott if you appreciate his hard work and what he's doing. And
it's
you
through
see the
my
value.
Institute, the Libertarian Institute, which means that it's all 501c3 for the end of the year tax report too.
Exactly. It's tax deductible and makes it even better. So when you go to tomwoods.com/Horton, that's going to redirect you to a page at the Libertarian Institute. So, all right.
Thank you so much, Tom Woods.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Thank you for doing what you do. We all appreciate it. We are all in your debt very much. And so that we're going to try and do right by you in this situation. So everybody, tomwoods.com/Horton, and I'll see you all next week. Actually, wait, hold on. I have a bonus episode coming this weekend. You got to listen to that, because that's actually another way we're going to raise money for Scott. He doesn't even know about this yet. So don't tell him. All right, see ya.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.